Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, the weather's getting warmer, so I, for one, am ready to say goodbye to my jackets and my sweaters and hello to shorts and tees.
I'm right there with you, Kate.
And you know what? I actually, I donned double quince the other night. I've got to tell you.
Okay. Yeah.
This is what's so great about quince, because I feel like I have really been able to update my wardrobe like for the long haul without spending a fortune. I wore a gorgeous white tee, like a simple, perfect white cotton t-shirt from Quince, but it was a little chilly out. So I threw on my cashmere hoodie, also from Quince.
Ooh, okay.
Like they have basically given me a lineup of timeless pieces that I feel like keep me looking, I'm going to toot my own horn, effortlessly chic, whether it's winter or summer. They've got premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. You got washable silk tops, really stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. Like truly, the list goes on and on. And the best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, something that's very important to us. So look, if you're going on a trip, if you just need to update your summer wardrobe, get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/forever35 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/forever35 to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/forever35. Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am Kate Spencer.
And I, over here, am Dori Shafrir.
Well, hello over there, Dori Shafrir.
Well, hello.
Hello. Friendly reminder, we are not experts. Together, we are two friends who do like to talk a lot about serums. And welcome to the pod.
Welcome, one and all.
Welcome, friends. Welcome, enemies. Welcome, strangers. Welcome, family. We are excited you're all here. We have a wonderful guest joining us later in the episode. But first, I don't know, Dori, if it's okay with you, I thought I would kick it skincare. Wow, that's the dorkiest thing I've ever said. I thought I would kick it skincare.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I'm just glad that you recognized how dorky it was, so I didn't have to say anything.
You know what? Having a child who's almost 13, it's like in the last 6 months, she's transformed. And part of her job now on Earth is to remind me what a fucking dork I am.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's never been like this before. Yes.
Wow.
And to be fair, she's not wrong. I am ridiculous. And I own it, and I'm at peace with who I am. I love myself, but like it is humbling.
Is it in the mom, you're embarrassing me vein?
Well, that's like nonstop all day long from both of them. But it's also a little bit like I need reading glasses. I can never find them. I can't figure out how to like do the software update on my phone. Like I somehow have started to regress into some sort of like stereotypical old person.
Oh, sure.
And I remember my parents doing this, and I think it's just like a cycle of life.
Yeah.
Like at some point we're like, what is happening? Where's my software update? What's iOS 17? You know? So,
yeah, I remember this in particular with regards to music, like wondering why my parents like record collection, because we had records growing up, like why it was frozen in like 1973.
Sure.
And now that I'm a grown up, I realize that like, yeah, it often like your interest in new music often just like stops because there's just too much of it.
Yeah, and also the music you liked 20 years ago was excellent.
Right. And you want to keep listening to it. So, and you have to be selective about what the new music that you're listening to is.
I just started listening to Blitzen Trapper.
Oh, I love Blitzen Trapper.
Yeah, they like came up in a Spotify radio thing and I was like, oh, I love this. And then I looked at the albums from like 2007 and I was like, well, I missed that, but I'm going to keep listening to music I would have liked back then anyway.
Totally. Anyway, so, sorry. Kate, take us on a journey.
Okay, all this, I don't know why I started here. Oh, because I said something dorky. That's why. Yes. Well, Dory. Part of also, I think, kind of entering this like middle of my 40s stage is that I'm having a lot of feelings about the changes of my face and my body, both inside and out, you know, like my cholesterol, but also, which we've talked about, but also my face. Look, jowls, they are real. And there's a lot of self-acceptance that goes into the changes that come along with aging. And also there's a feeling I'm noticing more of, like you start to kind of feel invisible to the world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Like, and you and I have been talking about how like challenging we're finding it is to like find clothes that kind of we like, that feel like stuff we want to wear. Like there's just kind of this weird feeling of like, hello, I'm still here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In one of these moments of like, what the fuck is happening, I decided to get a chemical peel on my face.
Okay. Now, for those of us who, like myself, have never gotten a chemical peel and sort of vaguely know what they are, but not really, can you describe what a chemical peel is?
Sure. So I went to just like one of your like a med spa type place here in Los Angeles. And I was like doing a consultation and they like brought this up as a thing. Cause I was like, I want my face to move, but also my face is getting old. I'm like, you know? And the doctor was like, how about a chemical peel? You can try the kind of like intro level chemical peel. So a chemical peel is essentially, to my knowledge, again, we have prefaced this podcast with we're not experts for 6 years for this very reason.
That's true.
But it's essentially applying an acid to the face, which then penetrates the skin, but is also like resurfacing the outer layer. So it's essentially an exfoliation, I believe. And, you know, projected results can be everything from like helping with sun damage, which is really kind of what I was after. I'm very fair. I have a lot of freckles, which I love, but like, they all like they've kind of gotten very turned into like big blotches on my face, despite my continued use of sunscreen. They can help with like fine lines and wrinkles. Again, this is all like purported results.
Right.
They're not going to work the same for everybody.
Right.
You can have a reaction to them. I think some people might use them for acne scarring. And I was like, all right, the price point was good because some of these things you go in and you're like, sure, I'd love to try like blah, 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 laser zapper. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, no probs, it's thousands of dollars. And you're like, what? And then you question all your life choices and like how you ended up in that conversation. And like, you know. So this one is called the Perfect Peel. And again, there are like different levels of chemical peels. And this is kind of a very, I would say, like beginner level.
Okay. Now, is the idea that you like work up to a more intense thing, or maybe you never do, or like what's the
I think
sort
it's
of
ultimately like
this?
What are you trying to target? What do you want to do? How much money do you want to spend? Like, et cetera.
Yes. Okay.
Et cetera. So I was kind of like, well, I'm curious. I'm peel curious. I'm going to just try this one and just see what happens. And I'm in a little bit of, I have so much on my plate right now. I didn't do my normal like deep dive, like, you know, hyperfixation. Let me Google everything I can about this peel. So I really went into it not knowing too much. And the process was pretty simple. They just, you know, washed my face, put the peel on, then did like another layer or two, and then kind of talked me through what the next steps would be for the week. And I had, there are a couple things I had to do at home. Like I had to do a couple peel pads, meaning like you get these two like take home pads and you kind of give yourself more of the, I guess, the peel on your face over the next day, plus moisturizing and sunscreening obsessively. And I'm almost a week out. I'm 6 days out now. And it's been an interesting experience. I still don't quite like know what to make of. I don't think I'm in the results phase yet.
Okay.
I think I'm headed there. My skin is definitely clearer.
Interesting. Okay.
Which is interesting. So some questions people in my life have had are like, did it hurt? Going on, painting it on, it definitely kind of stung, like a little warm, stingy feeling. It didn't bother me that much, and my skin handled it pretty well. The smell was atrocious. It smells like a chemical lab. So it didn't hurt, and then my face was just kind of tight. And then the following couple of days, it was just like tight and a little itchy, and I just did my obsessive sunscreening and, you know, wearing of hats and moisturizing and washing. And then I would say like a couple days ago, it started to flake because the skin, the layer of skin for most, many people, it will like peel and flake off. And I had warned my children, but then yesterday they were like, you look scary because my face, and then they noticed I was wearing a black sweatshirt and they were like, your skin's all over your shirt because it was flaking off my face. You're not supposed to pick it off or pull at it because that can result in like scarring or leaving a mark. Now, you know, I literally have a like skin picking as part of all my mental health stuff, especially when I'm stressed, which I am right now. So my face is giving me the gift of things to pick and I can't pick at it. But the skin has been, I watched some videos of people with like chunks of skin that they had to like cut off their face. Mine flaked. Like I described it as face dandruff. That's what it was like.
Right.
Flakes like that, like crumbs of my skin all over my collar of my sweatshirt. So I think I can still, I don't know if you can see, we're doing a video recording on this side. I can still see some skin peeling off.
I can't really see it. It well, does look we did like our, you're. Does like you look like you have fewer freckles?
I think it kind. That's what I mean by kind of clearing up the skin. I think it did kind of remove some of the sunspots on my face. And when I met with the doctor who I did this with, I was like, I like my freckles. Like I'm not trying to remove my freckles. Totally. I like my freckles, and they're also. I've had them since for as long as I can remember.
Right.
But she was like, it'll just help like brighten things up a little bit. And I do see that, which I find intriguing. It feels, also one thing I have noticed, my pores are gone. You cannot see a pore on my face.
Wow, that's so interesting.
I don't know how long that will last, but you cannot, there's nothing. It's wild.
Fascinating. Okay.
And the texture does feel smooth. I'm going to give it a couple more days to really make an assessment because it also does feel very tight and very dry, which I'm not loving. So they do recommend you do like a hydrating facial a couple weeks after to kind of get everything out, get all the gunk out. So I might do that.
Okay.
But it's been kind of an interesting experience. I don't know. I don't know necessarily if I'm not like gung-ho the perfect peel's number one fan, but I also felt like it wasn't a major lift. Like, you hear some stories about people getting chemical peels and then having to sit inside for a month. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went out in my sunscreen and my hat and I saw some friends and I was like, just so you know, my face is peeling off. And people were very, I did have to warn our guest today, Aparna, before our interview. I was like, hello, it's lovely to meet you. I loved your book. Also, my skin's flaking off because I, in a moment of existential panic, decided I was going to get a chemical peel. She was very nice about it. So that is my first journey into peels. I certainly notice more of a result than any sort of at-home chemical peel type thing I've ever done. Mm. Like, I definitely notice results. So that has been interesting.
Wow. Okay.
But I'm not sure yet, like, if I would do this again. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyone else out there in the chemical peel world want to share their experiences? Yeah. And, you know, I often, like, will get really excited to do all this shit to my face and then back out at the last minute because I'm scared of a negative result. You know, like, just thinking about, I've done microneedling once, but I don't think I would do it again. And I don't know. Like, you've done lasery things to your face, right?
I have, yes.
And did you feel, like, did you do IPL? Is that it? Or something along those lines?
It is called it's along the lines of IPL. It's not exactly IPL, but it's along the lines of IPL. And I thought it was great. It's very targeted, though. Like, they, like, zap each. I did it for age spots. They, like, zap each individual age spot.
Wow. Okay.
But I felt like it just sort of, like, generally also, like, brightened up my skin.
And do you remember how long it kind of lasted for you?
Excuse me. I mean, yeah, like...
Or still? Is it still going?
Yeah, it still is. Like, you know, when you go out into the sun, you're going to get some spots. I do try to be really careful about sunscreen. But I would say, I think I would ideally do it twice a year.
Okay. Yeah, I might do another mask and just kind of see what happens. Another peel, I mean. Excuse me. I might do another one of these perfect peels, see how the second one goes, and then form a stronger opinion. But I did just want to keep everybody abreast of what was going on with my face.
Thank you, Kate. I have been using a new device.
You know, there are things in our friendship that we don't share until we are in front of these microphones. And this is clearly one of them because I haven't heard about this.
So probably like a year ago, a company called Nebulift sent me one of their little RF frequency devices, their radio frequency devices.
Okay.
Now, it's all sort of in the same realm as like a new face, a solo wave, like...
Sure.
They all use like slightly different technology, but it's all kind of the same idea. It's like a device you rub over your face. Even like
Dr. Dennis Gross.
Dr. Dennis Gross. I was going to say Peter Gross.
I get him and Peter Thomas Roth.
That's, yes.
Confused.
That mask that you like, it's all kind of the same concept, right?
Right.
Skin tightening, fine lines, like blah, blah, blah. And you're supposed to use it on your face every day for 10 minutes. Like, you're supposed to go by region and it kind of buzzes like a electric toothbrush when you are supposed to change regions. I get kind of bored, so I haven't been doing it for 10 minutes. I feel like I could turn on music or listen to a podcast. I just haven't been that organized about it. I've only been using it for like 3 days, so I don't have like a conclusion one way or the other, but I just wanted to let you know that has been happening because historically,
I appreciate your transparency.
Well, historically, I've never been able to consistently use a device for any real period of time.
Hard.
And that's the thing with these devices is like, people are like, do they work? And it's like, yes, they work, but you have to use them all the time. Like, it's not like you use one for 6 months and then you can just stop.
Yeah, this is kind of where I, like, my hang up with any sort of device is like, is just the question of like, will you every day spend 15 minutes like zapping it all over your face with a special, you know, cream that you need? Like, it requires work or
right.
time.
It requires investment. You know, like I said, I was
financial investment.
I was fortunate enough to have this sent to me, but it's, you know, it's not cheap. Supposedly,
no, it ain't.
Supposedly, these are devices that are used by like a professional esthetician. So I don't know. I'm curious though. I was like, let me see if I can like make this work for me. So I will report back.
Yeah, I would be curious to know if you end up like sticking with it or if you are like me and you like run out of steam, which is always what happens.
Totally. Well, also because I'm doing it at night, like when I do my regular skincare routine, and often I'm just like, I want to just get into bed. I don't want to sit around and like, and I could like, I was like, well, I could do it in bed, but then I'm like, then I would either have to like bring my entire skincare routine to my bed or then have to get up anyway to do, you know what I mean? So I'm like, well,
it's
not really a great answer to this.
That's why the mask I do like, because I get into bed and put it on and I keep it under my bed. And
wait,
I just,
and
like,
then
pull it out, put it on.
And then what do you do about like your moisturizer and stuff?
Well, then I have to get back up and put the
moisturizer
on.
This is what I'm saying. Right. This is what I'm saying.
Right.
I see the appeal of the mask though, because it's more passive. Like, you can just kind of stick it on. Whereas this device, you have to be like holding and like moving around. So I don't know. You know, it's funny. We didn't actually talk about this with our guest, but this is something that she brings up in her book. In an interesting chapter that kind of touches on a lot of these topics about like beauty and aging, and, you know, the beauty industrial complex. And maybe the next time we talk to her, we will bring all that up. But I think it's probably a good time to introduce her.
Let's do it, Dory. You want to take it away?
Okay. I would love to take it away. Aparna Nancherla is a comedian and, as she says, general silly Billy. Her book, Unreliable Narrator, Me, Myself, and Imposter Syndrome, was published on September 19th. You might also know her as the voice of Moon on Fox's The Great North. She was also the voice of Hollyhock on BoJack Horseman. She was in The Drop on Hulu. She's also been on Lopez vs. Lopez. Like, just, you know, a litany of great TV shows. She was named one of the 50 funniest people right now by Rolling Stone. She was also, fun fact, she was in a Super Bowl commercial with Michael Bublé in 2019 for sparkling water.
Listen, that's the true dream, honestly.
That is the true dream. Aparna currently lives in Los Angeles, and we both really enjoyed her book and also really enjoyed our conversation. So we are going to take a short break before we do that, I just want to remind everyone on our website, which is forever35podcast.com, we have links to everything we mentioned on the show. We're also on Instagram at forever35podcast. You can join our Patreon at patreon.com/forever35. We have a 7-day free trial. So if you're Patreon curious and you want to just check it out. Poke around. You can join the Discord for those 7 days. They will kick you out though, like automatically, if you don't actually sign up. You can check it out for 7 days. You can hear all of the episodes we've already recorded. And then at the end of the 7 days, if you decide you're like, not for me, that's fine. But, you know, try it out. Patreon.com/forever35. We also have a newsletter at February35podcast.com/newsletter. And also, please do call or text us at 781-591-0390 or email us at February35podcast@gmail.com.
Dory?
Yes, Kate.
Can I also just give a shout out to our giving circle, which is currently raising money via your donations and our donations for local races in Virginia where things are extremely, extremely tight. So if you are a concerned citizen of the United States and you want to support progressive folks and their local races, please donate. Any amount helps. It's going directly to races at the local level through the States Project, which was just featured in a lovely article in the New York Times.
Yeah, it was really great.
We are so proud to get to work with them. So, and our listeners have raised so much money already. Like, you all have been so incredibly generous with your support of our giving circle. So thank you for doing that. And it's never too late to donate.
Thank you, Kate. All right, we are going to take a short break and we will be right back.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Kate, I feel like we are like barreling into summer.
It's happening so fast.
It is. And I feel like also with summer just come more social events. There's weddings, there's nights out, it's vacations. I mean, like all the things happening in summer. And what I love is that Honeylove has just the right thing for all those events. Feel comfortable and confident this summer with Honeylove's best-selling Superpower Short. The Superpower Short smooth shapes and lifts, giving you a flawless silhouette under any outfit with targeted compression technology that distinguishes between areas where you want more support and areas you need less compression. It's designed to work with your body, not against it. Speaking of working with your bod, the crossover bra, which I'm wearing as we speak.
I wear that thing every day.
I do too. It's my favorite Honeylove piece. Let me just tell you why.
Yeah, get into
it. Okay, do you want to tell me why?
No, I was just going to say, like, I don't even need to wear it to events. I wear it, like, the event is every day of my life.
Yes, that's such a good way of putting it. The bra gives all the support of traditional bras without using any underwires. And just, like, sidebar, I have put on some of my old underwire bras lately and been like, oh God, like, get this off of me.
No, thank
you. Once you start wearing Honeylove, you're just like, no, not going back.
You see how it could be.
Yes. Also, like, summer sweat under those underwires is like, ugh, the worst. Now you don't have to worry about it. Get the support you need with the comfort you deserve and treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market. Save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/forever. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we sent you. The summer vibes are just getting started, so shape your life with Honeylove.
You know, Dory, we talk to a lot of really fantastic, intelligent people on this podcast, but I don't know, maybe you're like us and you want to go even deeper.
I'd love to go deeper.
We like to go deep. And that's not only possible with today's sponsor, but also easy to accomplish on Masterclass. Every year I get really into the classes offered and the instructors offering them. Like, I'm all over the place with the things that I like on Masterclass. But this year I am very interested in the class Redefining Feminism, which is 14 lessons from Gloria Steinem.
Okay.
Now, they dissect issues women face in the U.S. and ways we can play a role in the feminist movement in our everyday lives. Look, I majored in women and gender studies in college, so this is right up my alley. But even if you didn't, even if you're like, this is the first time I'm hearing those words.
I would argue, especially if you didn't.
Yes. Get into it with Masterclass, because this is the year you can really learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Go from just talking about improving to actually doing the things you've been wanting to do with Masterclass. And it doesn't have to be redefining feminism with Gloria Steinem. It can be gardening in your own garden or your yard or patio. It can be learning to cook Indian food or designing a space that you love. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master like negotiation with Chris Voss or think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe capture your vision through photography with Petra Collins, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35. You know, the weather's getting warmer. So I, for one, am ready to say goodbye to my jackets and my sweaters and hello to shorts and tees.
I'm right there with you, Kate.
And you know what? I actually I donned double Quince the other night. I've got to tell you.
Okay. Yeah.
This is what's so great about Quince, because I feel like I have really been able to update my wardrobe like for the long haul without spending a fortune. I wore a gorgeous white tee, like a simple, perfect white cotton t-shirt from Quince, but it was a little chilly out. So I threw on my cashmere hoodie, also from Quince.
Ooh, okay.
Like they have basically given me a lineup of timeless pieces that I feel like keep me looking, I'm going to toot my own horn, effortlessly chic. Whether it's winter or summer, they've got premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. You've got washable silk tops, really stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. Like truly, the list goes on and on. And the best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And they only work with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, something that's very important to us. So look, if you're going on a trip, if you just need to update your summer wardrobe, get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/forever35 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/forever35 to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/forever35. Aparna, welcome to Forever 35. I feel like asking you our first question, which is what is a current self-care practice, is a bit like redundant, because I feel like your whole book really captures so many things that you've done to care for yourself. But just to get the ball rolling, would you mind sharing one kind of self-care thing that is resonating for you right now?
Yeah, one thing I've been doing recently is like shortly after I wake up in the morning, and usually after I brush my teeth, I put on any sort of random song and I dance to it. And it feels, I don't know why it feels so indulgent, but it really like kind of gets me out of my head and into my body. And I found, yeah, I mean, it sounds so like simple or something, but it really helps me kind of get out of that anxiety brain that I usually start the day with.
Can I ask, was that something you intuitively kind of one day was like, oh, I think I need to get out of my like cerebral state and into my physical state? Or did someone suggest it to you? Is it something like you heard somewhere? How did that come into your life?
I think I've been more and more interested in body work in the last few years of like doing therapy that's not just like mind focused and like what's going on in your brain, because I have lived a lot of my life, like kind of just as like a head detached from a body. So I've been working very hard on like feeling, you know, my arms and legs. And I think music, I also find very healing and stuff. So I think maybe it just was an idea I had one day. And then it really helped so much that I was like, maybe I'll do this again. And then I just kept doing it.
What are some songs you've been dancing to lately?
Yeah, that's a great question. Cause I'm very much enthralled to like Apple Music's recommendations. what do you want me to listen to, Apple? Mm-hmm. This is so embarrassing, but full honesty, I guess I think I've been for a while listening to a lot of Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, that's not embarrassing.
Really?
I don't think so. I did go to a Bare Naked Ladies concert sophomore year of high school. And it was one of like, we all threw mac and cheese on the stage and it was amazing.
Really? Is that a thing?
Like they have like a fandom and I think they have traditions in their fandom. And it might have had to do with if I had $1 million or like something. Oh. I haven't thought about this in so long. Sorry, this just came out of my brain. But yeah, no, I don't think that's embarrassing at all. That 1 week song is... pretty, they have some catchy tunes is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. They're very upbeat and they're kind of, the messaging is very just like, you know, nothing too deep or heavy. So yeah, like there's one song that's called like Postcard to Chimpanzees where you're just like, what made you write this? But I don't even need to know really.
It's so funny you mentioned them. Dory and I go back and forth about the music we were listening to in high school. We both grew up outside Boston and had very different like musical tastes. And Dory, yes. Now that I'm saying this, that's what I was up to. Bare Naked Ladies.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean,
so, Parna, thank you for bringing that back into my,
you're
my brain.
Oh, you're so welcome. I think they just released a new album. I think that's how I got back in sync with them. Not to reference another band, but yes.
I loved your book. I read your book on the heels of listening to Maria Bamford's audiobook. So it was like an amazing kind of a double whammy of two comics that I love just teaching me so much. And I was curious about your perspective as a creative because excavating your own life, especially when it's like digging into your experiences and the ways in which like self-doubt manifests, you literally write a whole chapter about it, but like that feels like a double whammy for me. And the fact that you were like, you did it, I don't know. It said to me like it was important for you to speak to this. So I would just like to hear, especially for our audience who might be learning about your book for the first time, like what was the kind of moment you were like, well, this is what I'm going to dig in on and it's going to be hard and painful, but it will also hopefully be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking through even this process because now it's like, you know, the book is out. I've been promoting it. And, you know, weirdly, like promoting your self-doubt, you know, also feels weird.
Totally. So
I was kind of like, what step of this process has actually not been completely like kind of destabilizing for me?
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe when I first originally had the idea before I at all tried to start, you know, doing it was maybe the honeymoon phase for me, but the idea itself came out of just had been doing stand up for a decade plus. I had gotten some moderate success, and I think as an artist or creator of any kind, you kind of when you start, you have this end goal inside of like when I'm either able to do this full time or reach these X, Y, and Z milestones that I've set for myself. And I realized like the more things I like kind of checked off my list, the worse my self-doubt got. And if anything, I felt more and more like, what am I doing here? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't deserve to be here. And that was very disconcerting because, you're like, this is what I wanted. Like now what is my whole ethos going forward? So that made me want to kind of pause and just be like, well, let's sit with this self-doubt for a minute. And, if it has so much to say, why doesn't it do some work for me?
I think imposter syndrome is such a thing we all resonate with. Have you already kind of been inundated with people being like, oh, me too. I see this
in
myself.
I mean, definitely people have reached out to me who are like, yes, I also experience these things, but maybe not in the same field of like comedy or something. But yeah, I think it is, it's weird because I write a lot about just stuff that happens deep in my brain. And it is always kind of, for some reason, surprising every time when I hear other people be like, oh, I've had these exact same thoughts, because I get so lost in my head that I always somehow forget that other people could be having the exact same experience. So I think writing and like comedy is one way that really forces me outside of my own kind of rigid set of beliefs that I've convinced myself of.
I was just going to ask, was there anything that kind of changed for you as you were writing the book, like a way that you had thought about yourself maybe in the past that now kind of upon reflection, your perspective shifted as you were sort of excavating these memories?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of the reason I wanted to write a book in general, which is something I hadn't done at all previously or anything even particularly long form in terms of writing, was that a lot of these things like self-doubt and like my anxiety and my depression are not things that cleanly get solved or like, you know, you figure it out and then you put it in its little box. Like, they are very messy and sort of ongoing, and it's like two steps forward, three steps back. And so I thought a book would be a better way to be a little more unresolved with some of the writing and a little more messy and ambiguous than like with a setup and a punchline where you have to have a little more removed from the whole thing. And I do think there was still that sort of perfectionist fantasy of like, I'll write it and then I'll like figure out why I have all this stuff and then I'll be cured. But yeah, that did not happen. If anything, it maybe made it worse at points. And yeah.
You talk about this moment in like early on in your career. This is in kind of your chapter in writing about the concept of saying no and the challenges that come along with that. And you make this point that you had said no, you backed out of a comedy show because you weren't feeling well. And then the booker proceeded to email you and be like, you need to be more professional. And it really introduced to me this idea of women especially are really encouraged to like own their power and say no. But often the considerations they have to make in terms of what that actually means are very real. And I hadn't really, even though I've talked about this and thought about it, that part hadn't quite clicked for me. And I really appreciated you making that point and was hoping you could kind of dig into that a little bit more and just kind of talk about how do you balance like this actual reality of like, if you do say no, oftentimes like you aren't given the other chance just based on being a woman and perhaps also specifically being an Asian woman.
Yeah. I mean, I think early on it is that maybe beginner's mindset, especially when you're starting in a career, trying to make a name for yourself in a field where it is just like, say yes to every opportunity, whatever gets me more experience or exposure. But yeah, I noticed early on that it's like, there was also just this like heavy, people pleasing aspect to it of like, if I don't show up, I'm going to let all these people down, or like, I'm going to mess up the show. And I think, yeah, with age, I've kind of let go of some of that, just like trying to be responsible for like everyone's opinion of me at all times. And there is definitely, like you're saying, kind of a more of a calculus you have to do as a woman, where it's like, if I say no, what are the implications of me saying no to this thing or this person? I don't know if it's just like the, maybe the freedom you get sometimes with getting older, where, I mean, it's a bit morbid, but just where you're like, I don't have enough time to say yes to all these things. Like, there's just not enough time left to try to please everyone else. And yeah, I don't know if there's a way to like maybe have that mindset as a younger person, because sometimes I feel like it's just something you learn with experience.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something I know I'm still personally working on. But certainly like the realization that like, oh God, I don't have time. But the time is running out.
Yeah, exactly.
Something like existential dread to like help you remedy your people pleasing.
But I guess to your point, just to add of like, you know, maybe the gender difference, I would notice like sometimes like if male comedians said no to something or like didn't show up to something, like there would be less maybe you know, implicit judgment of them as a person rather than treating it as more situational or circumstance or like, oh, they just forgot or something. Whereas with a woman, it's like calculated somehow, or it's like she always does this. And yeah, that's just like infuriating.
Can we talk a little bit about your chapter about social media and how you, I loved what you said about, you know, getting off social media, but still wanting to be, you said, informed and engaged. And that feels like just like such a difficult needle to thread, right? Like, especially when so much of the way we are informed now is on social media. Can you talk a little bit about what led you to get off of social media and how you are kind of threading that needle currently?
Yeah. So, you know, I started on Twitter pretty early on when I think it was newish, and I think a lot of comedians were gravitating towards it as both just a joke incubator and a way to connect with other humor writers or comedians. And, you know, early on I got success and like attention with it and job opportunities and just connected with people I wouldn't have otherwise. So I feel very grateful to it in that way. But then I definitely just burnt out on it. Like as my follower count grew, I just felt like I was engaging with it in a more and more unhealthy way. And I was kind of using it as a metric that wasn't translating well to my actual life. And that's also around the time I decided to start writing the book. And then the pandemic happened shortly after that. So I think just the confluence of all these things, just made social media a worse and worse fit for my brain of just like, too much noise, too many other people's voices. Like, especially writing the book, I was so in my head that any outside, noise would just be that much louder. So I stepped away from it, and you know, as you do as a social media creator, it was like, obviously I then got less engagement when I did post it later, but I wasn't like checking it at all. So it wasn't maybe bothering me in the same way. But then only recently have I gotten back on to like promote the book, and I feel very much in the, like, I don't know. I feel like it might, I'm now a social media user who maybe falls in line with like the Facebook aunt or something, where I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just like, I like don't know how to reach the audience. I feel so out of like touch, and like, I don't know how anything works. And I'm like, it doesn't make me want to go back, that's for sure. But I'm also just like, I feel so alien here now.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it just, it all moves so fast that you go off of it for a little while and then you come back on. It's like, oh, everyone's talking about some, you know, meme or whatever. And I'm just like totally out of the loop. I mean, I would feel like when Twitter was kind of like at its height, I would feel that way, even just like logging on the West Coast.
Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because everything like, moves so fast. It's like, oh, so that thing you just learned about is actually over now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like I was like, people are already making like jokes about the jokes about something. Like, I don't even know what the original thing that they were talking about was.
You know?
And I just feel like that is just broadly a lot of my experience with social media, is feeling like behind.
Yeah, like constantly behind. And also like now, I, because I don't engage with it as much, I frequently don't know what people are talking about. And that still, you know, can be upsetting because you feel very like maybe disconnected in that way. But then I just try to remind myself, like when you were on it all the time, that didn't necessarily make you feel more connected in the ways you want to be.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I am going through that right now. And it's like, it's hard to participate in conversations. And, but also your mental health is so much better. So it's, but it's like, then you lose out on some sort of social language, and finding that happy medium is really hard. But I think a lot more people are going to be going that route, because I do think we're becoming more and more aware of how fucked up social media can make us feel.
Yeah. I mean, I always like really feel now for like kids, where it's like you didn't even have the option of growing up without a screen, where I'm just like, what does that make?
Yeah.
Like, how do you make sense of the world when that's like how everything is, parsed?
I don't know. I have an almost 13-year-old who's doing a lot of like, she takes selfies and does a lot of like she does these faces where I'm like, what? How do you know how to do that? And they just do. It's, I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Like my sibling has toddlers and I'm like, they already know how to find their light or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back.
You know, we have been delving more and more into the topic of our skin as we get older and how we treat it and how we love it. Because look, as I'm learning in my mid-40s, as you get older, you deal with new things when it comes to your skin. Not that they're bad, they're just new. You know what I mean? Like I am now just discovering creppiness, Dory.
Okay.
Which is visible on my neck and chest. Luckily,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. Luckily, OneSkin, our sponsor today, knows all about things like creppiness. And I'm not overly concerned with aesthetics, but like I do just want to keep my skin healthy as I age.
Totally.
I love their topical supplements. They really help your skin feel, I don't want to say younger, but just vibrant, refreshed. They combine tissue engineering, data analysis, and cutting-edge longevity science to literally create the world's most effective product to help with skin aging. I am particularly fond of their face topical supplement. It's essentially a moisturizer, but it has their proprietary OS01 peptide to really help with all the parts of our skin that are exposed to environmental damage. You can use it on your face, your hands, your neck. I know here where we live in Los Angeles, our hands, we're driving. That sun is coming at us at all times. OneSkin believes the purpose of skincare is not just to improve how we look, but to optimize our skin biology so that it is more resilient to the aging process. They really create next level skincare. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and, more importantly, acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code OVER50 at OneSkin.co. That's 15% off OneSkin.co with code OVER50. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Can I ask you, like, in writing a book about mental health and your own mental health experiences, and I think you did such a nice job, like, putting little kind of, I don't want to say context warnings, but little, like, things at the start of different chapters to kind of, like, brief people, but also, like, add as a disclaimer, like, these are my experiences, and, like, we can have the same mental health diagnosis and have very, very varied and different experiences. But it still didn't stop me from picking up your book and then being like, I'm going to try everything in here because this will solve my life. So I guess I wanted to ask, like, for the reader who connects with something that you've written, like, what direction would you gently steer them in terms of, like, seeking help and support, but knowing that it's also an individual experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think I also just have the seeker type personality where I'm always like looking for that next thing that's going to really like change things for me. So I think I'm also just prone to that mentality of like the next big thing. Like I think I would easily, you know, be sucked into a cult because I think it's already like checking off the things for me that I want. But yeah, I think with other people, I try to gently remind them that Everyone is so different, and there is like, I do, even as someone who's constantly seeking cures, I also inherently distrust the self-help industry because I always feel like their solutions are too easy, where it's like, yeah, right, is the answer like 7 bullet points, you know, like I don't buy it. I always want it to be some sort of inward journey where I like find myself. But yeah, I guess just remembering that it is really no judgment on you if like one thing that everyone is like, this changed my life, does nothing for you. Like it just, it's so individual, and not just for the person you are, but like the stage you're at in your life and what else you have going on. Yeah.
That's a really good point. Just the like age and life stage.
I'm always jealous when younger people like somehow have an epiphany that I just learned. I'm like, how dare you? You have like 2 more decades of already knowing this.
I know. Speaking of just like mental health, navigating mental health stuff, you, in your recent interview with the New York Times, you were tapping before a live show. And you talked a little bit about, you know, the different, and you talk about this in your book as well, the different ways that you've dealt with depression and anxiety. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you're doing now and how you're kind of setting those boundaries also just in your professional and your personal life that you need to deal with your own depression and anxiety.
Yeah, I think what's still tricky for me, and I write about it a bit in the book, is just, you know, I still feel like even in promoting this book, a lot of the attention I've gotten is like, this is a comedian who talked a lot about mental health in her act, and then it like affected her life, and then it's like written about in the book. And I really have had to delineate like a clear boundary between like me talking about it in my work versus my experience of it in my actual life, where they're, you know, rarely the same thing. And even like talking to an interviewer about tapping on stage is still, you know, it doesn't mean that maybe I'll be doing it in 6 months or that it's always working perfectly, but it's like right now it's what's working. And it's tricky though, because sometimes I am like, if I'm being so open about everything, is that changing like the way it's showing up in my actual life? Like, I guess it's that whole thing everyone struggles with now of like the performance you're putting out into the world of who you are versus like you as an actual person in your day-to-day life.
Yeah. And when you're performing stand-up, it's even...
Oh, yeah, yeah. That adds another layer of complexity.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, trying to remember that it's like me being really anxious to get on stage is separate from me then getting on stage and being like, here's a funny thing about my anxiety. You know, like it's sort of two different selves. And yes. I try not to like conflate them as much as maybe I used to.
Can I ask a question about work? Because you talk about like breaking free of productivity mindset and just like the way in which you were raised to view like work as not for like pleasure, but and like that can be like how we're raised in our family, but also like the world around us. How did you like? Do you still have that kind of inner voice about what work should look like or what productivity should look like? Or have you kind of developed and cultivated your own feelings throughout your career about what work and professional success looks like for you?
That voice of productivity and, you know, achievement is so ingrained in me. I don't know if I'll ever be able to fully unlearn it. Like even in a given day, you know, I know at this point, like I'll get to maybe one thing on my list, if that. And it's still like at the end of the day, I'll be like, you didn't do anything, you know, like just that internal manager or whatever. So I think I have to constantly kind of reinforce a different mentality. And for me, it's also just tied to the fact that it's not just productivity, but it's sort of like, what is the productivity working toward? Because for me, it's like the fulfillment I find in doing things things is often in the day to day rather than the end goal of like, even with this book coming out, I don't think I'm the most satisfied now that it's done. I think it's more like somewhere in the process of like making discoveries as you're writing it. Not that it's always easy. Like there were definitely rough patches with that too. But yeah, I think for me as a creator, like putting something out into the world, like that actually feels like the point at which I feel least connected to it. So then it's like productivity is very little about the end goal because that's not really the part that I find gratifying or fulfilling. Even though it's like in our society, it equates to like the check marks and the prizes and the attention. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think that stuff is as cool as I once thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, it really is like, I start to, when I look at my own kids too, like it starts to become clear. It's like woven into everything. I guess I can only speak specifically to American culture, but like, wow, it's just, you pick it up at a young age. And so by the time you start to like awaken to things, it's like, well, I'm going to pull that thread and then all the other threads are going to come loose about everything. It's just, it connects to so much with how we treat ourselves.
Yeah. And I think the thing that then can be even trickier is like, if you're then, you know, at like I am talking about my mental health or like my self-doubt, then it's like, well, if someone else is doing it and like more successful than me, then what does that say about like even my like shittiness is not, you know, can't do a good job or something. I don't know. It just creates ever more strange ways of measuring yourself, I guess.
Yeah. I'm thinking about like just you talking about getting off social media, which is something I've been doing, but then it's like, somebody's doing it better than me.
Totally.
It's like, I can't even, like I'm still finding ways to make it a comparative situation as opposed to even just like you were kind of saying, reflecting on why you're doing something, but it's very hard.
Yeah.
And that does all kind of connect, at least for me, to that like core idea of imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah. Just this idea that sort of everyone else is kind of operating from a playbook that you like don't know how to access, I think it's always been this feeling that I have under the surface.
Yeah. I have kind of a silly question for you, but you made a reference in your book that spoke to me on such a level. And Dory, I'm curious if this resonated with you, but you were talking about kind of your experiences in high school and college. And made a passing reference to ski passes, tags on jackets being like a signifier to you of a certain kind of person, of wealth. And that it was visceral for me as a kid growing up outside Boston. That was like such a sign. So I just wanted to pose this for you because this is fun, I think a fun question. But like, what are the things as a kid for you, and maybe even as an adult, that like signify a rich person or have that same kind of like, ski tag on jacket? Like for me as a kid, it was people who had water and ice machines on the front of their refrigerators that felt so glamorous. But I was just curious, we all have different things. We're all growing up in different environments. Like, were there other things like that for you that kind of clicked on in your head that signify a certain type of person?
I think I'm pretty bad at like figuring out people's social status sometimes, because I think I'm very easily fooled by like, if you present really well, I just kind of assume you're really well off. Like a woman with a nice bag, I'm just like, well, she knows what she's doing. Like I think I kind of default to assuming everyone else is just keeping it together better than I am. And I like very rarely will see someone and be like, oh, just like me.
That was such a perfect encapsulation of a certain type of East Coast.
Yeah. Like I'll notice a lot in airports because I think in airports, I'm always like, if you can look put together for this, like what, like you don't need, you don't have to, like, who are you dressing up for? TSA?
Kate, for me, it was when, like the kids had their own phone line, like not just like a phone in their room, but when they had like a whole separate number, it was like the kids' phone.
Yeah.
That was like oh, like, I don't even, I guess it also for me was like, oh, they have like cooler parents than I do, because I wasn't even allowed to have a phone in my room, let alone like my own line. But yeah, I just remember that was like, ooh, the kids' line.
Yeah. And we didn't have like cable or like, you know, video games growing up. So I think I just was like, oh, everyone else is living a better kid life than I am.
Right. There's so much cooler stuff at somebody else's house.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. I'm curious what those things are now for like kids and teenagers of this generation. I don't know. I should ask my children.
Yeah. I feel like they might have some ideas.
Yeah. Oh, they'll have plenty to say. Well, Aparna, this has been really wonderful to get to talk to you. Your book is really just such a pleasure to read and so insightful. I love how researched it is. I really appreciated that.
I know. I mean, staying on brand, I did feel a bit like an imposter doing all the research, because I think the books I gravitate towards are like the essays written by like, you know, writer journalists, and I'm just like, oh, they're so well read and they know all this stuff. And so I did my like, you know, fan fiction version of that. But I was like, if you pay attention, there's only three periodicals that I seem to read from.
that's okay. Well, that's more than many of us. So well done. Well, thank you again. And for folks who are interested in finding your work, what is the best way to follow you and follow your work?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to engage with me very haphazardly on social media, I am on Instagram and Twitter, or yeah, whatever is now Twitter, at Aparnapkin. It's just Aparna and then PKIN. And then my website is aparnacomedy.com. And I'm going to try to be better about posting there.
And your new book is Unreliable Narrator, Me, Myself, and Imposter Syndrome. And there's truly something for everybody in it. So everyone should
definitely.
It
was so great. Thank
you
for writing
it. Thank you for reading it. I'm such a fan of both of you. So thank you for having me.
You know, one of the things that I really loved about reading Aparna's book, you know, she's a comedian I have followed for a while and always really admired. And it is so helpful for me, a fellow, you know, imposter syndrome, people pleaser type, to hear other people talk about it. Because I think one thing that perhaps many of us or all of us feel is like, we're the only one. That successful, brilliant person over there can no way be feeling like they're the imposter. And it's really validating and also humanizing. And her book just was like, it was just so thoughtfully done. I really loved it.
Yes, I completely agree, Kate. And yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed talking to her. There was so much in the book that I was like, oh my God, I totally relate to this.
Totally. And I mentioned this, but I read it immediately after finishing Maria Bamford's new book on audiobook, which I also just want to heartily recommend. Maybe I'll talk more about it at another point, but that was also wonderful. So lots of great comedians writing books about mental health right now. Thank you to them for their
service. For them, for us.
Truly, we all need it.
Truly, it's great.
Okay, Dory, you spoke so beautifully about your process in getting rid of baby clothes and like the, like just the like emotional weight of it, as well as just like the way it like takes up space in your home, but also space in your heart.
Well, I wrote about it in my newsletter.
I know, it was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. So yeah, if you want to kind of see more of my thoughts. My mom said I made her cry. So
it was really beautiful.
Thank you. That's at dory.substack.com. You know, it's still going.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot.
I've made major progress. There was like for example, there was a bag of like basically like newborn clothes that I had asked if my friend Katie, who's due imminently, if she wanted them. And she was like, yeah, but she lives like a little bit far from me. And then the other day I was just like, you know what? I'm going to mail these to you. Like I was like, I'm not going to like have this bag just like sitting around for weeks before I decide to like go up to her house. So I just shoved everything in an envelope. And I was like, you know what? That was worth $7. You know what I mean?
Perfect. Totally. Yeah, yes. Like,
I will go see her after the baby is born. But in the meantime, these clothes are out of my face.
Yep. Yep. You're investing in your peace of mind.
Yes, exactly. I'm also going to tackle some clothes of mine. And this is something that I will, by the time this airs, I will have either written about it in my newsletter already, or I will be about to write about it in my newsletter, but my like attempts at buying new fall clothes, and subsequently like selling old clothes. And there is a full length mirror that has been just like sitting in our hall bathroom because there's no real space for it in the house. But I was like, oh, I could use this mirror for like try-ons. But then also I have this fantasy of like taking all the clothes out of my closet and putting together outfits like a la Clueless and like taking pictures.
Oh my God.
And having those. But I need to get like, I was like, well, Polaroid film is really expensive. I don't know. I saw this. It's a work in progress. But that is like the next phase, I think, of my ongoing project is putting outfits together, inspired by Sophie Strauss, putting outfits together, taking anything that needs to be tailored to be tailored. Like I have a great pair of like wide leg, sorry, and now I'm just rambling, but I have a great pair of like wide leg black pants that I got from Banana Republic Factory like a year and a half ago. And I think I've worn them once because they're too long and I just need to get them hemmed, but I just haven't done it.
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard.
And I'm like, I would wear these. I would wear these more often if they fit me correctly. So I'm going to do that. Like, are there other things in my closet that I've subconsciously been avoiding wearing because they don't quite fit for whatever reason? So that is both my weekly intention and a sort of like bigger ongoing intention.
I love that idea of making like a personal lookbook of all your fits.
Thank you, Kate. What about you?
Amazing. Well, last week I was just focusing on doing like at least a 5-minute meditation, which I did, but I have been kind of in that stress cycle where I'm just like gnawing my fingers off and not doing any of my like good self-care practices, but I'm hoping to just kind of barrel through it.
Okay.
And then, you know, we have a group of friends who we gather and write with, and we're on a text chain together. And today everybody was talking about their hobbies. They're all very crafty, our writer friends. And I was like, I don't have anything I like doing with my hands. And then I remembered that I did enjoy beading necklaces for a hot second there before I broke my hand 2 years ago. And so I was kind of like,
you gave me one.
I did. I gave you one and I gave, I think, my best friend Lise one. And then that was the extent of my beading. And then I then I stopped. But I enjoyed doing it. And I think I was just kind of like, I don't know where to buy beads and I don't know anything about jewelry making and what is silk string. And I just kind of felt overwhelmed. So my thought was that when I kind of get through this work deadline that I'm on and can kind of come up for air, maybe just like watching a couple YouTube videos, like seeing what I might need to kind of do this again on my own, because I did really, I really enjoyed it. It was something I could do to kind of get out of my brain space. And I love giving things to people. I love making things. This is like a fun little thing I could do to make for other people. So that's my intention for the week.
I love that, Kate.
We'll see. We'll see next week if I stick with it. But that's the beauty of doing a podcast where we hold ourselves accountable in this very public way.
Totally. All right. Well, let's also, before we go, remind everyone that Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sam Junio. Sammy Reed is our project manager and our network partner. is Acast. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.